Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Show Report, where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on this quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is publisher of We Are Libertarians, Chris Spangle.
Hello.
And managing editor of the We Are Libertarians news site, Joe Ruiz.
Good to be with you, gentlemen.
How are you guys doing after a festive 4th of July?
I'm sleepy and full of bean dip.
That sounds like an awful combination. I'm well.
Then that's
I'm better than Spangle.
And what a great, great reason to use Google Hangout instead of meeting in person.
No, I don't like what
I love the internet right now.
I don't like what you people are inferring.
His wife Sam, she said she's taking a nap. I don't think it was a nap. I think she passed out.
She's hiding. She's hiding.
That's what we call the recovery phase right there. That's the senses are lost.
I celebrated Murica way too hard yesterday, so she was with me, so she's in the other room napping. I said, what are we going to do tonight, honey? And I said, I'm going to do a podcast. And she said, okay, well then I'm going to go watch Lifetime and sleep.
So Murica.
My daughter asked me what we were going to do tonight, and I said the same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
She says that all the time, too, but we never seem to manage it.
You know, speaking of world domination, guys, this week, especially in the spying on your friends department, while President Obama was on his recent trip to Africa, he was forced to make some remarks in response to The Guardian yet again releasing information about the activities that the United States is up to. Apparently, guys, we are spying on allies, and amazingly, he did not deny the behavior. And in fact, he really just tried to play it down. Let's check out this first clip where the president attempts to explain and even deflect this recently realized practice.
I guarantee you that in European capitals, there are people who are interested in, if not what I had for breakfast, at least what my talking points might be, should I end up meeting with their leaders. That's how intelligence services operate. So I don't know what is precisely in this article. I've asked my team and the NSA to evaluate everything that's being claimed. When we have an answer, we will make sure to provide all the information that our allies want. The allegations have been.
So first thing to point out, guys, that bird in the background just kind of squawking at the president was pretty appropriate.
That's actually Joe Biden. He's had a few mimosas.
Nice. But this is a multi-billion-dollar apparatus, and when I say this, I mean the intelligence community. And essentially, the president just admitted that they're collecting information that is completely useless. All right. What did they have for breakfast and what are their potential talking points if he happens to call them on the phone? I mean, can you even imagine what this morning breakfast report looks like? You know, Kim Jong-un had Fruit Loops and chocolate milk for breakfast. I mean, is this guy eight?
Like together? You know?
I mean, if this is what he's doing, let's send him an Xbox, let him play Call of Duty. He can post his scores online, call himself a war hero. That should shut him up for a few months, right?
Kim Jong-un looks like the type of guy who has Fruit Loops with chocolate milk together.
He does.
You know, not like the white milk, but chocolate milk poured over the Fruit Loops.
I really like to play Halo. Halo's
it.
Such a good game.
Now listen, that is mildly racist.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, you switch over.
Listen, Joe was doing that in parody.
Joe can get away with it, though.
It's South Park humor.
Yeah, Joe's our out-of-town correspondent.
America killed my father.
All right, back on track. So,
well, and then you have, like, Chancellor Merkel from Germany. You know, oh, look, she had cold cuts and cheese for breakfast. That's gross. And talking points. Oh, well, I guess she's really mad that we just spied on her breakfast.
Can you imagine?
Doesn't
Angela?
Can you imagine that?
Can you imagine if Angela Merkel had bean dip? Ugh.
It would be half the Spangle effect, I'm sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is quite the show.
I mean, doesn't she understand that that's what friends do to friends, right? Obama is going to spy on her because, hey, he just likes her that much. I mean, if he doesn't have her talking points, how can he possibly load a response on his teleprompter to give her, right?
It just doesn't seem irrational to me that the foreign intelligence services would be spying on each other and spying on their leaders. And I guess it's not shocking that the UK and the US would have these fake, you know, the fake internet cafes to try and find out what other world leaders are thinking or doing. I think we're shocked that it still goes on to the level that it happens, because when we think of spies, we think of the Cold War. We think of James Bond. But, you know, we have this view that most of the countries in this world get along with each other, and they really don't need to spy on each other because there is some sort of Pax Romana going on between, you know, most of the world's countries. But it's just not the case. I mean, it's really exposed that they're spying on each other probably more, and in certainly in more technical ways than what they were doing in the 60s and, you know, before. So,
right, but is this really a program that we really need to be spending billions of dollars on? I mean, what we're getting are breakfast menus and talking points. What's the real value here?
Let me be clear. The federal government is here to serve you, and we just want to make sure we don't get your order wrong.
Yeah. If they could figure out a way to deliver an Egg McMuffin to me every day, I guess I just, you know, it. When you are dealing with data, you want as much data as possible. And what he is trying to say in a very ineloquent way is that we want as much data as possible. Joe's a sales guy, and Joe will tell you that the more data you have, the better conclusion that you can make. And
sure,
you want to have as much data as possible, and it's really, really easy to spy. I think the media question here, one question that I have is why is nobody really delving into the amount of foreign intelligence that we're collecting? So I guess they don't want to get spied on themselves.
Well, the other interesting point is that the president feels obligated to give an answer to the allied nations, and yet there really has not been a great answer back to the American people about PRISM and the other programs. Do you see a double standard there? Do you think it's odd that foreign leaders take a precedent or a preference over the American people?
I just find it interesting that he is asked about it overseas, but not here. I think when you look at the level of reporting, in fact, the video that we're watching is by The Guardian. The amount of questioning that leaks through. I watched the press briefings during the day, and you know, you watch the questions that are asked by some of the reporters, and they do ask the tough questions a lot of times, but it never really makes its air. I don't know what the editorial process is, but you don't hear him justifying this stuff on the evening news, and he really has not taken any kind of, you know, just shows the shrinking violet that is Barack Obama, that he doesn't stand out in front of the, you know, the American people. He stands out in front of the press every once in a while, but not the American people, and explains some of these things. And he is his White House is so poor at public relations, it's just not even funny. For all the pomp and circumstance around the 08 campaign and how he's the greatest communicator ever, he's so bad at managing messages and getting out in front of this stuff, and he's forced to answer as opposed to being upfront about what's happening. And I think it erodes the people's faith in their government. And when he comes out and makes statements like, you know, Egypt, you really need to get your stuff together. It's like, who gives a crap what you have to say about Egypt or any of this?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the other countries, they should be demanding answers. And I found it interesting that they were thinking of introducing, what is it, sanctions on the United States until we give answers and until we end the program.
That's kind of an interesting thought. But it does seem like the U.S. government it can get away with just about anything, and it always seems like it needs no explanation or as if no one else deserves an explanation. I think that's problematic. And the Obama administration could do a lot in just explaining, and whether or not the American people as a whole, as far as like an approval rating or anything, actually agreed with the sentiment behind whatever decision was being debated, that's one thing. But so much of the time we just get no explanation whatsoever. And that, I mean, that's really the issue. It's like you said, it, you know, he just gives, they're so poor in this administration at communicating to the people. And they could just as easily say, well, this is our rationale in this process or on this issue. This is what we've taken into consideration. This is why we made the decision that we made. And if we want to argue that, that's all right to do so. But half of the time, it just kind of projects this aura of, you know what, we're the guys in charge, we're the leaders, and we make the decisions, so you guys just let us do our jobs.
How many times do you hear from Barack Obama where he says, what I will not accept is, you know, and it's what he said last week, and the conservative media went crazy over it, rightly so. I mean, I'm not a global warming denier by any stretch of the imagination. But when I hear
card-carrying member of the Flat Earth Society, right here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when you call your opponents the Flat Earth Society and you just dismiss them like that, you're the president, and the president does a very poor job of leading in the media and using the media, and I mean using the media in getting his message across, because he's constantly out on the campaign trail, and you know, it seems to me to be a complete departure from the way that the White House has past have worked, where there's a lot of wheeling and dealing behind the scenes, calling people up to Capitol Hill, building relationships with the press, and you know, it all starts with the top. It all kind of trickles down. This administration is very aloof with the press. They don't necessarily see the press as friendly to them, and nor should they, because, you know, even though this is called the Shell Report, you know, you watch some of those press briefings, and they're really trying hard to get answers from Jay Carney.
You know, here's an idea, guys. Perhaps the president could save some of these other countries a lot of money and just post the White House menu and a few general talking points each day. And maybe we could cut down some foreign aid if he'd just go ahead and share that much. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually worried about what would happen if Michelle Obama gets a hold of the menu information. Like, Brock, Joe Ruiz, South Bend, Indiana, he went to work this morning without eating any breakfast. That's not a healthy way to start his day. We have to do something about this.
All right, guys, last question on this one. Time to stop spying, or is John Kerry right, and this is all normal behavior?
I mean, from a libertarian point of view, it's not normal behavior whatsoever. You know, from a normal point of view, which is what the world as we know it describes as normal, it's totally normal. And we're not doing anything that is not being done to us. But I think from a libertarian perspective, we're non-interventionist. We don't find it. If you had a libertarian world, you wouldn't find it necessary to spy on others, because you wouldn't have a militaristic, empirical mindset to your government, and the need to spy on others and collect this kind of data would be greatly lessened, pretty much to zero.
You know, speaking of abnormal, let's move on to the latest Clapper gaffe. Now, last week we talked a little bit about James Clapper. He's the director of national intelligence for the U.S. government. In a recent letter to Senate Intelligence Committee Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein, he apologized finally for his erroneous statement during a congressional hearing where he said that the NSA was not gathering data on millions of Americans. Now, let's give the right context. Here's the exchange from March 12th of this year between Senator Ron Wyden and Mr. Clapper, where really all of the trouble began.
Just one, Madam Chair, and I thank you, and this for you, Director Clapper, again on the surveillance front. And I hope we can do this in just a yes or no answer, because I know Senator Feinstein wants to move on. Last summer, the NSA director was at a conference, and he was asked a question about the NSA surveillance of Americans. He replied, and I quote here, "The story that we have millions or hundreds of millions of dossiers on people is completely false." The reason I'm asking the question is, having served on the committee now for a dozen years, I don't really know what a dossier is in this context. So what I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly.
So there's the answer from Mr. Clapper. And of course, we now know, thanks to Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, that Mr. Clapper's answer at that time was, in fact, untrue. Later on, Mr. Clapper came under fire
subsequent
articles.
Can we just call it a damn lie, please?
It's a damn lie.
It's not untrue. He was lying through his little weaselly teeth.
Well, he said not wittingly. Does that mean that maybe it was going on and he just didn't know about it, the spokesperson?
And that they're all completely witless?
Well, it gets better because Mr. Clapper actually came back and in a later interview said, well, look, I gave the least untruthful answer. So at that point, he actually admitted that, yeah, I told a damn lie, but I can't come out and say it's a damn lie.
Did he say the least untruthful? Is that what he said?
The least untruthful was his response when he was called to the carpet on what he said. And so now, according to a recent Guardian newspaper release, you know, Mr. Clapper sent this letter to Dianne Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, saying that his statement was erroneous and he completely apologized for giving that false testimony. The excuse he gave in the letter was that his recollection failed him. He said, I simply didn't think of Section 215 of the Patriot Act. And that's his answer. He forgot about the Patriot Act. So let me ask you guys. So with that said, was Mr. Clapper blindsided by Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald's leaks, or do you accept his explanation that he forgot the single piece of legislation that gives his organization the most scope and power to act?
No, he didn't forget. He lied. He was pushed up against the wall by a member of the Senate who is not friendly to his program, his agency, who cares about the Americans' privacy, and had said previously that if the American people knew what was going on in their name, that they'd be shocked and they'd be disgusted. And Wyden was not in a position legally where he could explain what was taking place or happening. And so he gave the head of the NSA the opportunity to explain and come clean to the American people, and Clapper didn't take them up on that. He lied through his teeth. He wasn't taken by surprise in that moment. He wasn't taken by surprise. He didn't forget the Patriot Act. I mean, he had 2 weeks, 3 weeks to sit there and think of a great excuse, and this was the best that he could come up with. I mean, it's probably the slickest answer that he could give, is that, oh, my recollection failed me. I couldn't think of it. It's a great legal answer. And it is clearly strategically asked to present in court in case he is brought up on perjury charges. For the life of me, I do not understand why the media and why members of Congress are not going after this guy to bring him up for perjury charges.
Yeah, and they should definitely at least ask for his resignation. I think if you are tasked with doing a specific job and your only job is knowing and understanding these vital points and then giving those answers and interpreting your understanding of things sincerely to the American public or to whoever you're in front of at that given time, then if you can't meet that task, then you shouldn't be doing the job. And so here he is. Oh, I couldn't recollect it. So is this an age thing, or is your memory going bad? What is going on that now you can't understand and interpret and give these vital facts back to the American public? You just shouldn't be doing the job. So it's either a lie or you're not qualified anymore.
Ryan, what do you think?
So at this point, I think we have to call into question everything that Clapper said or has said to us since taking his position as the Director of National Intelligence. You know, he is clearly not a trustworthy source, especially from an oversight standpoint, which is the purpose of Congress in this situation. You know, in our unique case, we're from Indiana. One of our senators is on that committee. He's responsible for oversight, just as Dianne Feinstein, Ron Wyden, Mark Udall, and a slew of other senators, and they cannot effectively oversee and represent the U.S. public when officials are willing to lie under oath with the arrogance and the feeling that they won't get caught. Had Edward Snowden not leaked this information to the public, we would never have known that James Clapper lied. And for that reason, I have to ask, why does Clapper still have a job?
And I just don't understand why the media is not covering this. I mean, even in some of the news journals and the magazines, it's just not really a question that is a hot topic. And I understand how busy of a media cycle it has been the last couple of weeks. I mean, and we are libertarians. It's like every other day it would have been a different subject the last 2 weeks. But this is a question that needs to be asked and needs to be covered, and public officials need to be pressured to bring this guy up. I mean, if he wanted to give a truthful answer, a truthful answer is this. Well, I can't confirm or deny that, and I know that you'd like a yes or no answer, but there is information that is sensitive in this case because of national security, so I would be happy to brief you in a classified briefing. There you go. You're going to get some pushback, but you're not going to commit perjury. Like, really?
Yeah. Well, and from a media standpoint, too, you can actually say, yes, it has been a busy news cycle, but you could cut back on some things, like the George Zimmerman trial.
Please.
You know, and you brought that up in the We Are Libertarians podcast.
Just how dare you bring that up? How dare you, sir?
That made it into the director's cut on YouTube, but not the actual podcast.
Right. Okay. Well, regardless, the media could do a little bit less of that and show a little bit less of these things that are going on that actually do impact the majority of Americans.
You know, at this point, I think it's up to us guys to pressure our elected officials. Like I said, in Indiana, we have Senator Dan Coats, who is on that oversight committee. If you look at the We Are Libertarians news site, there is an open letter to Senator Coats asking these very questions. I think if you live in a state that has a senator on that oversight committee, you are obligated to write a letter to that senator asking these questions, demanding to know why it's acceptable for a public official like James Clapper to lie to oversight committees and, in effect, mislead the American public. If you're not doing that, you have no reason to complain.
Hey, before we move on to the next topic, breaking news, as we've been on this podcast here, maybe old news by the time our listeners hear this podcast, Venezuela has offered asylum to Edward Snowden.
Wow.
That's great news. I hope he's able to get there.
It's going to present a huge PR challenge for Snowden and WikiLeaks and the people like us who support Edward Snowden. Well, how could he go to Venezuela? Well, listen. So
you know what? It's the choice between being tortured and thrown in a jail cell or living in a beautiful country and enjoying freedom. There's no PR choice there.
Well, the PR choice, really, I think, when you look at Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning, the choice is clear. Do we know what Bradley Manning's motives were? Do we know what Bradley Manning has to say about what he did? Has there been an interview in the press where Bradley Manning has been able to express his thoughts about what he did or what he saw or why he did it? And as a result, how many people know who Bradley Manning is versus Edward Snowden? Edward Snowden, in my view, by leaving the country, by going to Hong Kong, doing some taped interviews, which he controlled the visual. Instead of them going back and finding like Twitter photos or old photos from high school, every photo you see of Edward Snowden is him in Hong Kong in that video. And, you know, he controlled the media by leaving and giving himself an opportunity. And I think at a certain point, he probably, in my view, he would like to get asylum, but at this point, he has been able to defend himself in the public by being free, whereas Bradley Manning did not have that opportunity.
I think that's a great point, Chris. So let's move on. We've talked quite a bit about, you know, why aren't journalists covering things, and now Illinois Senator Dick Durbin wants the government to decide who should be considered a journalist. And it's not on the merits of the quality of their work, as libertarians like us would prefer, but instead it's a legal definition for shield laws. While Senator Durbin was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, he questioned whether bloggers or tweeters should be protected under the Constitution as a journalist and given media shield rights. Let's listen into these comments.
Weekend. It's also about the First Amendment and the role, the very important role that the media play. Honestly, are you comfortable with the idea that the president has asked the attorney general to review the attorney general's own actions?
Well, you've raised an important point, and I heard Senator Graham call for special counsel. I'm not ready to do this at this moment. I'd like to know if Holder has any conflict in here beyond what we've heard when it comes to the Fox case. But here's the bottom line. The media shield law, which I am prepared to support, and I know Senator Graham supports, still leaves an unanswered question, which I've raised many times. What is a journalist today in 2013? We know it's someone who works for Fox or AP, but does it include a blogger? Does it include someone who's tweeting? Are these people journalists and entitled to constitutional protection?
I mean,
so there it is.
He first of all, he totally ignores the question, which was about James Rosen. I mean, is he thinking along the lines that a Fox News journalist is not an actual journalist? I mean, it just boggles my mind, this concept that we would let Dick Durbin or Lindsey Graham decide who is or who is not a journalist or who has the First Amendment right to political speech. I mean, mm-hmm. as a person who founded We Are Libertarians, who is working, you know, with all of the great team that we have in We Are Libertarians, we have the right as Americans to speak freely about our government and about politicians. And if we were ever fortunate, and our plan is, to one day grow into a site that has reporters that can report the news, they would be journalists because they are journaling about the events of the day. They're reporting the news. And commentators have the First Amendment right to speak freely. And here in Indiana, you know, it is sort of settled that if you're tweeting or Facebooking, it is First Amendment. So if you are in Indiana and they just ban texting while you're driving over the last couple of years, if you're tweeting or Facebooking while you're pulled over, you will not get a ticket. It is covered under the First Amendment right because they have ruled in or some of the lawyers in the General Assembly have said that, you know, tweeting and Facebooking are covered under the First Amendment. And I think it's also scary, too, that Dick Durbin thinks that if you are speaking out on Facebook or Twitter, that you don't have a right to say what you want on Facebook or Twitter as an American citizen. Who gives a damn if you're a journalist? Who gives a damn? You're an American citizen speaking about your government, and if you are in a position to give out information and it's, you know, if it's legal for you to give out, or even if it's, you know, I don't know, just it's bizarre because Edward Snowden didn't take information and tweet it out. He gave it to two very respectable journalists, two very respectable publications, released it piece by piece responsibly. They held back a lot of things, and that's what journalists do, and that's what James Rosen at Fox News was doing. That's what, you know, all the journalists who have been spied on by the government have done. They have sources that give them classified and sensitive information, and they oftentimes don't release it. There's another podcast about media called Long Form, and it was with the former ombudsman of the Washington Post, and he talked about how they often have sensitive and classified information come into the Washington Post, and they don't publish it because they don't want to put anybody's lives in danger, and they have a responsibility to protect people and to make wise decisions when covering it. So, you know, he has little respect for journalists, let alone everyone's First Amendment rights.
Well, what's really interesting, guys, is that this topic has been taken up by the Supreme Court. There is a landmark case. It's the Brandsburg case, where this court came out and they said that the freedom of the press is not confined to newspapers and periodicals. In fact, it necessarily embraces pamphlets and leaflets and every sort of publication which affords a vehicle of information and opinion. And so if you take that, the Supreme Court ruling in its literal sense, a blog site, a tweet, anything that is looking to disseminate information or opinion if you're conducting those activities, you are in fact a journalist.
That's actually really great to hear, and it's actually kind of a big relief to hear that, because the first thing that I guess suspect when I begin to see gentlemen like this and people like Lindsey Graham talking about defining something like what is a journalist, it's just kind of a backdoor to regulating the things that are being said and done on the internet. You know, a lot of efforts have been made to regulate the internet. And this just seems like a backdoor to that to me, and also to restrict free speech. Even to look at things like the last election and how much a Ron Paul campaign could gain traction using a vehicle like Facebook and Twitter. And it just seems like these people who are already part of what we would suspect is a corrupt system are trying to perpetuate that by taking a further power grab and making sure that competition in the future, you know, that they have full control of the message and that competition doesn't exist. And so voices who are dissenting, like a Glenn Greenwald, are no longer problematic to their device.
Completely. And I've got two stories from my reporter days at the radio station. You know, my first week on air with Abdul, I just laid into and gave a Spangle-like rant against the local politician who was being an absolute D-bag. And at the break, paused, and over the intercom, Abdul looked at me and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "It was good, right? I really let him have it." And he goes, "No, you're a moron." I go, "What?" He goes, "We've got to work with these people. How are you going to go out and cover them at a press conference after you've called them all these names and taunted them and bashed them? How are you going to get any kind of access as a reporter if you sit there and you say things like that in that way? I mean, think." And I was like, "Oh, well, that makes sense, yeah." And he's right. Like, if you want to get access to people like Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham, you've got to treat them a certain way with the respect that they're deserved. And, you know, it's a soft control of the press, this notion of access. And that's why you see a lot of the traditional media. That's why the White House correspondence job used to be the job that you could get in journalism. Now it's like, "Oh, don't put me there to die, because you're never going to get any real reporting done." The second was in 2007, there was a mayor's race in Indianapolis, and it was very, very one-sided. Like, the Democrat was just, you know, everybody thought he was gonna run away with it. And the Republican had no staff, no money, you know, no real prospects of winning. And he ended up winning in an upset, and it was pretty earth-shattering in Indiana politics. It has led to a wild ride. And the sitting mayor, the Democrat, was giving a budget address, and then in public comment later on, the Republican rebutted what the Democrat had said. And so I'm walking out with a reporter from a local TV station, and I said, "So how much of that are you going to cover from the Republican?" She said, "Oh, none. We're not going to cover any of it." And I looked at her shocked. I said, "Well, it's, you know, August. It's September. It was sometime, you know, a month away from the election." And she said, "Yeah, we're not going to cover it." I said, "Why not? I mean, that's legitimate news. Like, people should have a right to hear the other choice." "Well, he doesn't spend any money with us and ad dollars, and so my editorial board said that we're not going to give him any free advertisement by covering him." Hmm. And my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe what I heard. And I said, "Was that a joke?"
"Welcome to the free press."
And she goes, I'm not the one that came up with that." And she was gone within 2 weeks because she was not going to report for that particular TV station anymore. You know, it was just jaw-dropping. And so you really have a political class and a lot of the establishment media. Guys like Dick Durbin want an establishment media. They want a Bob Schieffer, who the most out of control Bob Schieffer is going to get is when he waxes poetically about the good old days when Congress could get things done, and then, you know, knocks off at 11 on a Sunday and goes and has some Metamucil. I mean, He's really not a tough interviewer. He is a softball machine. You know, the closest that anybody gets is really Chris Wallace on Sundays, and that's not even really tough. And that's the kind of journalist that they like. They like the soft, they like the one that they have sway over, that they control their access. They spend their ad dollars with those organizations. You know, Dick Durbin's going to put ad money into the Chicago Tribune when he runs for office. And so he'll get a certain outcome out of that.
So Chris, do you see this kind of posturing by Senator Durbin as a means to further domesticate or to tame investigative journalism in the media overall?
Sure. I mean, they are...
Twitter, you know, when a guy like Matt Drudge, who comes up from the social media world and becomes one of the largest news outlets, you know, on the internet, that's a pretty scary thing to a politician, I would think. And so are they really just trying to limit or prevent those types of media channels from really coming up and becoming the new mainstream?
No, what's happened, Twitter and YouTube and things like that terrify politicians, especially progressive politicians like Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin, because then it can't be controlled. It's out of control, and people can go on and say wild and crazy things about you. Like,
it's like they're free or something.
Like you're a big government Republican that supports taking away our freedom. You know, what are you, a crazy person? I'm Lindsey Graham. I'm great. I love liberty and freedom. I just like security, too, and bombing other people. You know,
said by no one.
So what's happened is, you know, there are a lot of trail teams. So when you are in a campaign season and you see it around Congress, there was a video of Michelle Bachmann running away from some reporters recently. There really is a TMZ aspect to political coverage now. Especially groups like Think Progress will follow Republicans. Think Progress got a great video of Richard Murdoch in the press conference right after his infamous gaffe in the 2012 elections, and it just buried him even further. And so what they'll do is they'll send stringers, these liberal blogs or other campaigns or conservative blogs and, you know, their campaigns will send people with video recorders to various events and videotape the whole thing, hoping that there is something that they can use or edit. And so what has happened is you have politicians and elected officials going through the acceptable channels, the establishment channels, and they don't go out and stand in front of the public anymore because there may be that gotcha moment. So as democratizing as the internet can be for it gives us a voice, it gives us the ability, you know, I'm in Greenwood, Indiana, Joe's in South Bend, Ryan's in, what, Valparaiso? Or you're heading
You're
in Fort Wayne, heading to Valparaiso. I mean, it's, you know, the internet gives us the ability to chat, but it also means that it's too much exposure for some of these folks. So, I don't know. I just find these kind of words troubling because I'm the type of person who thinks that your right to speak out against your government in any way you see fit is protected by your First Amendment, which is a natural right that ought to be protected at all costs. Mm-hmm. And that Dick
Durbin do you foresee the day when someone sends out a tweet about a politician or a position on an issue and that person is all of a sudden liable legally for some crime? Do you see that as someday a tweet being illegal?
Oh, God, I hope not.
I'm sure if you look at Snowden, if Snowden had tweeted this stuff out, it would have been illegal. I mean, is the information classified? Are you sending a message? And I'm saying this only, you know, I'm not saying this because I believe this. I'm saying this to just highlight the message. If you're sending out tweets saying that you want to kill Barack Obama or any other high-profile person, that tweet is illegal, and you will get investigated. And so, you know, you have to use your own speech properly, and I don't ever blame the Secret Service for going out and investigating people who say they're going to harm government officials. I mean, those tweets are illegal, but
sure.
That's,
I guess, more what I'm aiming at, guys, is that, do you ever see the time where, you know, clearly Dick Durbin wants to be able to pull up non-journalists with information in front of a congressional committee. They want them to be subject to being forced to talk to the FBI. Do you just see that at some point, even a harmless tweet that maybe had a little inside information, all of a sudden individuals are being cast into to those horrific situations and being questioned by their government?
No. I mean, as long as we keep a good, strong, solid court system. I mean, the First Amendment, especially with journalist rights and the internet, this is something that Democrats and Republicans were a little more restrictive, but now with the Tea Party, they seem to have gotten their crap together. Even things like high school newspapers used to not be covered by the First Amendment, and even that has been relaxed some. So I think our ability to speak freely has been loosened, but there certainly is more pressure, and you will always hear people like Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham try and shame people into speaking the way that they want people to speak. So, you know, middle finger to both of you.
So fighting to keep a strong democracy is clearly paramount to freedom and is incredibly important. However, over in Egypt, you know, during their fight for freedom, during their fight for democracy, Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi has been removed from power. It is perhaps one of the largest protests that a modern democracy has ever seen, except that, according to CNN, a failed Skype call during the Zimmerman trial was more important. And so they basically put this coup in a box while technical fools bumbled their way through a Skype call for the candy trial. Glenn Beck was no better. He commented that the military coup was a failure. He actually labeled it a failure in the middle of an ad that he was doing and then moved on to other topics. It's really just been bizarre coverage, at least from my point of view and from what I've seen. I don't know, do you guys see that the narratives that are coming out are just so far apart and almost so far ahead of the story that it's really difficult to put together what's happened?
You know, the majority of what I've heard about this entire situation has been, with exception of the like initial day where the story broke, has been in my, you know, in libertarian circles on Facebook with We Are Libertarians, with the show report. And I haven't really heard an in-depth analysis of it anywhere else.
The only place that I've heard an in-depth analysis was Democracy Now!, a podcast that I think is tremendous when it comes to foreign policy and civil liberties, but atrocious if you start talking about like welfare benefits and things like that. But you know, it's an independent media source that is another podcast website. They did a great job of breaking it down. I think the news, they don't have any context to give. All they can give is facts. And they can't give context. You know, most of these reporters, when you see their live shots, they're way far away from the square. And I don't blame them. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, especially if I were a female reporter with what's been coming out of, you know, there was a Dutch reporter that was assaulted. And there was another, I just read an atrocious account of what some of the female reporters are going through as they try to cover that area. And it's really a dangerous situation. So I think it's really, if you're a reporter in Tahrir Square and in Egypt, it is a brave, brave position.
Actually, in all sincerity and honesty, guys, the best overall coverage I've heard about Egypt and the current situation was on the We Are Libertarians podcast, episode 50. Okay. You know, I really feel like that you guys covered a wide spectrum. You covered the economic, the individual, the government, the legalities. I mean, it was really a lot of time spent on it, free of spin, free of judgment, and just a really excellent discussion. So if the listeners out there are looking for a pretty wide discussion that covers most of the major topics, you can't do much better than downloading episode 50 and checking out what Chris and Joe and the rest of the crew had to say. It really has been the most complete coverage I've heard yet.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we try to, in these stories, you know, friends are asking, is it good or bad what's happening there? And it's neither. I mean, it's gray. And you've got all these various interests that have these competing, you know, it deserves context. And I think it's incredibly important because we're looking at a situation where if this country, if Egypt, which is an enormous country with you know, enormous influence in the region, descends into a civil war, it has the ability to spread to the entire Middle East. And that has major implications for Americans, you know, at the gas pump, foreign policy-wise. You know, it's a very, very dangerous situation. It's so much more important and deserves so much more coverage and context than the George Zimmerman trial. It isn't even funny. And maybe I ought to throw in here what Maya's commentary was on the Zimmerman trial, because it was interesting, and she explained that it does have some purpose, but I think they cover the Zimmerman trial because it's easy. The default position with most media outlets is, really, think about this when you watch the TV news especially, or most news, local news and national news. Is it press releases? Is it information that could have come from a press release and they added a quote or video from a person who was giving a quote? And is it crime reports? Because the majority, and then sports and weather and the other stuff that is easy. Because it is easy to do sports because you can get scores. It is easy to do weather because you can track the models. It is easy to report crime because a police officer wrote out in a police report exactly what happened. And then it is easy to cover press releases because someone else wrote the story for you. That is the majority of the news in this day and age for the corporate media. And this Egyptian thing is hard to understand, but George Zimmerman, throw a camera on it and then we can do analysis.
Well, and just to show just how difficult this topic is to cover, let's take a quick listen to two clips. The first one being from CNN. And in this clip, the overthrowing of the government, the arrest of Morsi, according to the commentary here, was all part of Barack Obama's master plan.
Set of developments. I want to come back to the panel. And Jonathan, I mean, you've written a book obviously about the president, about sort of his sort of comportment versus his enemies. But the president also gave a very famous speech in Cairo, yeah, in which he attempted to position himself in the United States vis-a-vis the Arab world, the Arab street, and recognizing the flowering of democracy after the United States has a history, unfortunately, of supporting dictatorships in the region. Can you talk a little bit about these sort of changes that we've seen, you know, a year later? Almost another Arab Spring, well, an Arab,
you know, summer. The diciness of this situation, notwithstanding, the street that we're seeing right now is the street that the president was addressing in Cairo in 2009. So what he wants is a new generation of Arabs who respect democracy, who are more secular, which is one of the fascinating dimensions of this that hasn't been commented on enough. These are not all secularists, but largely they are reacting against the Muslim Brotherhood's Islamicist stranglehold on the process right now in Egypt and their implementation and administration of government policy. So these are the people that Obama was addressing in that speech. And if this ends well, which is a big if, that could be seen as some sort of a, not a victory, at least something that was in key.
So if you see right there, it was all part of Obama's promise when he originally spoke to the Egyptian people in 2009 that this would come to pass. And I erroneously said CNN. I forgot about the existence of MSNBC, so you guys will have to forgive me for that.
My order of cable news is CNN, MSNBC, Fox. So, I would rather watch MSNBC than Fox a lot of times, but that's just because it makes me so angry. I read Alter's book about Obama. It was the first one. I think he's written two now, but I read the first book that he wrote, and it just was so glowing. I think Alter, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I think he's is the current or former Newsweek editor, very establishment journalist slash commentator slash, you know, media figure. And I wouldn't call him a liberal shill or a Republican shill because I just don't think liberal bias exists. I think bias towards power exists. But that book,
well said.
That book was a love fest. He loved him some 2008 Obama.
I think it's definitely fair to say that anyone who would make this part of the, and by this I mean the Egyptian upheaval here, anyone who would make that part of an Obama master plan definitely at least has a man crush on the president.
And I would expect people to take kind of a similar look at it as what I am. Like, I'm almost having a hard time listening to what the pundits are saying in this clip. And I'm just looking at this audience and I'm saying, holy cow, that is a lot of people. Like, to me, that's the story, that all of these people believe in something so strongly that they're willing to congregate in the streets like that, and not so much what they are trying to spin it into during this clip.
The thing that Alter completely misses and completely ignores is the fact, just the signs about Obama in that crowd. They are at Bush levels. I mean, where they are burning Bush and burning Obama in effigy, and the people in there and around the world have completely fallen out of love with Barack Obama. That's probably part of why they're so mad at Edward Snowden over at the White House. You know, Alter ignores. I mean, Drudge posted on the front page the other day, Obama, your bitch is our dictator. And the majority of the signs are very, very pro-American people, but they're very, very anti-American government. And
that's got to be in the running for the protest sign of the year.
Yeah, I know.
That's amazing. So now we see, you know, Jonathan Alter's view of it is, of course, this was part of Obama's plan and everything's going as it should. We shift over to Fox News, and what you find out is that, oh, wait, it's not part of a master plan. Instead, the president has completely screwed up. So let's listen in on that.
Ambassador John Bolton, formerly the Bush administration, says America has played a weak hand during the entire Arab Spring. Listen.
I would think the advice from the State Department would have been to do just that, to cozy up to the Muslim Brotherhood. In any event, that's what the president did. That's why the demonstrators in the streets thought that he and our ambassador in Cairo, Ann Patterson, were really trying to defend the Brotherhood's administration under Mohamed Morsi. I think this has been a reflection of the administration's aimlessness and lack of understanding of the Arab Spring from the get-go 2.5 years ago, and in particular, its lack of understanding of the situation in Egypt. The U.S. has huge interest here, preserving the Camp David peace accord with Israel, keeping the Suez Canal open, and yet we've played a weak and indecisive hand here during the entire period of the Arab Spring.
So there you have former ambassador or U.S. ambassador John Bolton essentially saying, no, this is not part of a well-played plan. This is not part of a well-thought-out scheme. This is a completely weak play by the part of the president and the administration, and that we have completely screwed up as a nation. So I pose it to the two of you guys. Is this a master plan, or has the U.S. seriously screwed up in the way that they've handled Egypt?
I was just going to say, you know, I think that it's spin, either way you put it. I don't necessarily think that either side is accurate in their portrayal of these events, or, you know, the Obama administration's role in these events. I think that the most honest and sincere look at what's going on in Egypt, as you're going to get, is that protest sign that Spangle was referring to. Something like that is indicative of what's really going on in the situation, because it's indicative of the thoughts and the narrative that the people have on the ground level there. And so I think that if you want a sincere narrative about what's happening, keep your eyes on the people and keep your eyes off of the pundits and the news people who are talking on both sides of the aisle.
John Bolton was the UN ambassador under George Bush. He's been rumored to be ramping up a run for president in 2016 as a Republican. So, you know, he is tinged with that political brush. He's also a very, very outspoken neoconservative. And a neoconservative is someone who... It is a term that libertarians use to describe Republican foreign policy advocates who favor intervention. And Bolton loves to intervene in as many places and in as many ways as possible to exert American force and influence for change. And libertarians were completely against that. We find that that causes more problems than not. Now, Bolton... I think on both of these clips, I think it shows an arrogance amongst the American media, and maybe it's on the part of the American government and the American people as well, that we have to play a role of some kind, or that we caused this, or that we have aided it, or maybe we just didn't have a damn thing to do with it at all. You know, I mean, did you ever think about the fact that maybe there is a large population of young, unemployed Egyptians who cannot find employment, who have grown up under a dictator, who have thrown off that dictator, and we're not going to accept a dictator wrapped in democratic clothing. And they are casting off that dictator for freedom. They're casting off the Muslim Brotherhood because they want civil rights. They want women to be empowered. Maybe they're not thinking about the American government at all, with the exception of how much they hate the American government for enabling a government that oppresses them. If I were an Egyptian, I would be so furious at the Obama administration and the American government for giving weapons and money to a regime that oppresses my mother and my sister, that keeps me unemployed. I would feel like they do. So maybe we don't have anything to do with it at all other than that small role.
I think that's a wonderful outlook, and I know that a number of us have been posting on Facebook and Twitter that, you know, this is a situation where, why can't the U.S. just stay out of it? Why do we have to decide winners and losers? Why do we have to influence, you know, what kind of government ends up in Egypt? As long as the people organize and it's a mostly peaceful transfer of power, why do we even have a say in it?
You know what I was thinking? This is an awful joke, but I was thinking, if the Bengals were to re-release Walk Like an Egyptian today, would they be walking harder? Like, how would the walk change?
Once again, Joe, we have managed to take an incredibly serious topic,
Joe,
and we totally made it classy.
You never, Joe, that's what I do. Let me just give you a piece of advice. You never need to preface one of your jokes that this might be a bad joke.
Excellent, guys. Well, we've gone through quite a spectrum of stories, I'd have to say, whether we're talking about James Clapper and his early onset of horrible memory loss,
dementia, yes,
or the uprising in Egypt, or, you know, what is a journalist, or whether or not we're spying on friends. It's definitely an interesting world, especially this week, and it continues to get more and more interesting. And it's important, especially the who should be a journalist question, that people really talk through that, because they are the eyes and ears into this interesting world, and it's really how many of us learn what's going on around us, and we really need to be cautious and about the stories we hear, to do our own research, to make sure that we understand the issues, and to really internalize what's going on around us, and make sure that we try to open ourselves up to all of the angles, which is what we're trying to do here. And this week, guys, I think we definitely changed the narrative on at least a few of these stories.
Now that we've done a lot of hard work, can we have a little treat for ourselves?
Definitely. You guys know that at the onset, when we've talked about forming the show, we definitely wanted listeners to be involved. And I was excited because after our first show, we actually had a listener step up. The guy's name is Mike Davis. Sent in a link of Russell Brand's visit to the Morning Joe show. Now, normally, Russell Brand would not be on my top list of people to promote. However, he agitated the Morning Joe crew, and especially Mika, so much that I feel obligated to play this clip.
I mean, I generally think that Russell Brand smells. Like, I just think he smells like B.O. and just would be...
He typically smells of B.O. and herpes, but I can't...
Yeah, but this
I can't turn down this clip.
This is media porn, my friends.
We'll give a little listen and then have a little laugh afterwards.
What's wrong with you? I understand everything he's saying.
No, it's because you're looking at him. When you don't see him and you don't see the lips,
I understand the whole thing.
Stop saying he. I'm present. Russell. What's wrong with your manners?
You're good.
Be polite.
Good.
I'm coming in tomorrow with a big necklace, and I'm opening.
Look beyond the superficial. That's the problem with current affairs. You forget about what's important. You allow the agenda to be decided by superficial information. What am I saying? What am I talking about? Don't think about what I'm wearing. These things are redundant.
There was also a great moment in that clip where they're just talking about him behind his back, and he's sitting in right in front of them, and he just looks at them and he goes, "Is this what you all get paid for? Is this what you do for a living? Any moron could do this." And then he reads the clip. I mean, it would just, if you haven't seen the video, you can go to the We Are Libertarians YouTube channel, and we make a playlist every episode of the videos that we air. You got to watch this thing. It is so good.
It really is an excellent takedown of the entire Morning Joe team, and he does a really nice job of pointing out just how silly their banter is and how they're really not paying attention to anything that's really important as far as why he's there as a guest. They're not promoting his show. They're focused on his shirt's open wide, and he's got interesting shoes, and and he talks funny, and really he's got an interesting, I believe his tour was actually canceled, but it was an interesting concept. And when he goes into his portrayal of a news anchor, he actually does a better job than anyone else sitting at that table.
Mm-hmm. Completely. I love the reactions that you get from the different people sitting there at the table, too, because you've got Mika, who kind of goes from trying to be sympathetic and trying to, like, she gives these very insightful looks. I think Joey from Friends would call that, like, fart-sniffing acting, where you just kind of breathe in deeply, like you've smelled something, and take a minute to remember your lines. And she does that. And then she goes from that to the Friends fans out there will understand. And if you go to the next part, then she looks like things just got really awkward and she's scooting away from him and like he's made her nervous. Or the other guys, it's like they don't know what to do being called out or what they're being called out on. And so they just continue to make those bad moves. They continue to talk about him
and the guy,
as if he weren't sitting at the table.
And the guy does, like for a British person, to do the Cockney accent that like Dick Van Dyke did in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is so insulting. It's like, "Hello, governor. How are you? See you, Crumpet.
It's an excellent clip.
Would you like fish and chips?"
And we certainly appreciate our listener, Mike Davis, for sending that in to us. It's that kind of interaction that helps make the show so much better. If you would like to participate on the show and to help us out with a clip, leave a message on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page or contact We Are Libertarians through Twitter at We Are Libertarians.
Man, that was an old man moment. Get at us through the Twitter.
let's redo that. Here, edit that for me, Spangle.
I'm not editing anything. Move on.
So
I will let your
embarrassment
live on forever.
I am so ashamed. I will do better next week. However, if you would like to leave us a clip, we would love the interaction. Leave it on the Facebook page for We Are Libertarians. Shoot us a message over Twitter. Be sure to include the Shill Nation hashtag or the Show Report hashtag, which is what our show is called.
Man.
Let's use the...
What are you, John McCain over there? Hey, Spangle.
I can't get this right. I don't know why this is happening.
You're doing a fine job. I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah.
I want to brag on you. You bragged on us. Let me interrupt your very important soliloquy here to compliment you. He asked us, he's like, "Are my prep notes coming even close to what you guys do on Weird Libertarians?" And like Joe and I just laugh. Like back in the good old days of the We Are Libertarians, we didn't even know what we were talking about till 2 minutes before the show, and then we'd just start rambling. Now we at least 24 hours before decide on a couple topics. Ryan sends out every week this beautiful list of the talking points of what he's going to say, the clips, the subjects. I feel totally prepared when we sit down on the show, and it's fantastic. So I think that's, you know, that kind of dedication and quality is only going to make this show improve and get better and better. So thank you for putting in that time and effort for, you know, not only the network, but for the listener as well.
I'm happy to do it. No, this is an absolute blast. So if you want to use the right Twitter hashtag, it's the Show Report. Leave us a message. Like I said, this show is really for you, the listener. We're trying to unpackage and expand news stories. And the more you interact, the more that we can work with you. And also be sure to check out and visit all of our other wall sites. That We Are Libertarians network is growing with an ever-growing list of podcasts available, and we can also Use the views on the new site that Joe Ruiz takes great care in managing. Be sure to check out those properties along with the Facebook page and the Twitter account. And, hey, that's the news for this week, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to talk to you guys next week.